ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Reading this morning, text 34, plus 33 that has no purport. Prati pragahinam kamsam abhasyaha shariravak asyastum ashtamo garbo Antayam vahase buddha prati pragrahinam kamsam abhasyaha shariravak asyastvam ashtamo garbho antayam vahase buddha. Prati pragrahinam kamsam abhasyaha shariravak pati on the way pragrahinam who was managing the reins of the horses kamsam unto Kamsa, Abhasya, addressing, Aha, said, Asharīravāk, a voice coming from someone whose body was invisible, Asya, of this girl, Devaki, Tvam, you, Ashtamaha, the eighth, Garbaha, pregnancy, Hanta, killer, Yam, her, whom, Vahase, you are carrying, Abodha, you foolish rascal. Sounds like Prabhupada. Translation. While, let's go back to the previous one, to 33 with no purport. Oh, beloved son, Maharaj Parikshit. Interesting, he's a 16-year-old boy calling the king, my beloved son. When the bride and the bridegroom were ready to start, conchels, bugles, drums, and kettle drums all vibrated in concert for their auspicious departure. When, this, 34, when Kamsa, controlling the reins of the horses, was driving the chariot along the way, an unembodied voice addressed him, you foolish rascal, the eighth child of the woman you are carrying, will kill you. Purport. The omen spoke of Ashtamo Garbaha, referring to the eighth pregnancy, but did not clearly say whether the child was to be a son or a daughter. Even if Kamsa were to see that the eighth child of Devaki was a daughter, he should have no doubt that the eighth child was to kill him. According to the Vishva Kosha Dictionary, the word garbha means, quote, embryo, and also arbaka, or child, meaning there's no gender connected to the word garbha. Kamsa was affectionate toward his sister, and therefore he had become the chariot driver to carry her and his brother-in-law to their home. The demigods, however, did not want Kamsa to be affectionate toward Devaki, and therefore, from an unseen position, they encouraged Kamsa to offend her. So that's the unembodied voice. Demigods. Moreover, the six sons of Marichi had been cursed to take birth from the womb of Devaki, and upon being killed by Kamsa, they would be delivered. When Devaki understood that Kamsa would be killed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who would appear from her womb, she felt great joy. Her affectionate brother. The word vahase is also significant. That's in the last line. Because it indicates that the ominous vibration condemned Kamsa for acting just like a beast of burden by carrying his enemy's mother. Vahase means you are carrying. So this is, the speaker is Shukadeva Goswami, obviously, O beloved son, Maharaj Pariksit, is how he's addressing. And he's narrating the preliminaries. So the previous was, Brahma said to the demigods, Krishna is within the womb of Devaki, go and honor Krishna in the prison house of Kamsa. So Brahma is speaking like that, and then Shukadeva Goswami is speaking to Maharaj Pariksit. Here's the circumstance. So we heard the circumstance leading up to the ominous, the a-sharira vak. We know the word sharira because we say it every day when we take prasadam. Sharira avidya jal. This sharira, this body, is a lump of ignorance. So a sharira is unembodied, and vak means voice or sound. So an unembodied voice. Now it was coming from the demigods, it's just the word for word is they were unseen. So a sharira vak. Let's go back, then we'll come forward again. There's, when Lord Vishnu was approached by the demigods, along with Mother Earth, the personification of Earth in the form of a cow, went to the shore of the milk ocean, offered prayers to the Supreme Lord, who said, very soon I will appear. Brahma requests the demigods to take birth first in the Bhoja, Andaka, and Vrishni dynasties to assist me in my pastimes. And so they did. Expansions of them, or partial expansions of them, did. So a little bit about family tree. And I did a little research because for me, I get really lost in who's related to who. And so I have to like go over it about 50 times in order to let it sink in. So Vasudev and Kunti were brother and sister. And they had the same father. That's why they're brother and sister. And their father was Shurasena. Shurasena was a king. we heard from the previous verses, he settled in the Mathura area, and thereafter Mathura became capital for the dynasty of Shurasena. And Kunti originally was named Pritha, but when Pritha was given to King Kunti Bhoja by Shurasena because he had no children, he named her Kunti. So Kunti, or Pritha, had four sisters, and Vasudev, her brother, had nine brothers. So 10 plus 5, 15 children, sons of Shurasena, or daughters and sons of Shurasena. And Shurasena had a brother, and Shurasena's brother was Parjanya. So Parjanya and Shurasena were brothers, but Parjanya was the king of the Vaishyas, and Shurasena was the king of the Kshatriyas. And their brothers, they had a common father. And their common father was Devamira. Now Devamira had two wives. One was a Vaishya wife, and from the Vaishya wife came Parjanya. And so just like Vidura was born as the son of a Shudra mother, so he was considered Shudra. So Parjanya was born of a Vaishya mother. In fact, her name was Vaishya Devi. And the son, Parjanya, was given by Devamira the authority to be king of the cowherds. Parjanya. Nice name, means rain. For agriculture, you need rain. So Parjanya. And Parjanya had five children. The middle child was Nanda. The eldest was Upananda. So when it was time for Parjanya to pass on his title as king of the cowherds, naturally it went to the eldest son, Upananda. And Upananda said, right at the time of the ceremony, my middle brother, he's the really qualified one. He should be the king of the cowherds, and I'll just assist him. So Nanda, on the assistance of his elder brother, became the king of the cowherds. Then Nanda Maharaj became the father of Krishna. So now all of this is, Krishna is related to his aunt Kunti. So it's a little complicated. That's why I get confused. Devamira, Parjanya, Nanda, and Krishna. Devamira, Shurasena, his other son, and Shurasena, Vasudev, and then Vasudev married Devaki. And so Devamira's father was Bhoja. So that's the Bhoja line. Then over here is the Vrishni line. And in the Vrishni line, we discussed yesterday briefly, there were two brothers, Ugrasena and Devaka. They're brothers. They had the same father. His name was Ahuka. And Ahuka, his father was Purnarvasu. So in the Vrishni line. So there's the Vrishni line and there's the Bhoja line. So Devaka had a number of daughters, seven of whom were married to Vasudev, because Vasudev is over here in the Bhoja line. So over here in the Vrishni line, Ugrasena, one of his sons, he had daughters, excuse me, Devaka had daughters, Ugrasena had a number of sons, one of whom was Kamsa. And Kamsa wasn't exactly the sister of Devaki. He was cousin sisters, but we always hear the sister and brother. So as the brother, we heard yesterday that it's part of culture to show affection in appropriate manner, so that the daughter who's leaving the home of her father feels the affection of the family, the brother, or in this case the cousin brother, escorts, menial service, being the chariot driver. He's a royal order. He's in the king position, the son of Ugrasena. And he's taking this humble position of being the chariot driver. That's within the verses. He's controlling the reins. It's a menial service. It's the servant position. But by culture, showing affection, and specifically, he felt affection. I mean, he was a demon, but he felt affection. Even demons can have affection, and he had affection based upon minimally based upon the bodily connection. And so he's doing the chariot driving business at the end of the wedding ceremony. And then in the course of the progress from Devaka's kingdom to where Vasudev resided, because after the marriage the girl goes to the home of her new husband, this Asharira Vak, this voice from the sky, was heard. Kamsa, you are such a fool. So that voice was the demigods. And we hear, there's no explanation given, but the demigods didn't want Kamsa to have affection to Devaki. Now, that sounds weird. Why would they? She's a great devotee. She's a pure devotee. She's going to be the mother of the Supreme Lord. So that the demigods had some understanding beyond the event of Devaki would become the mother of the personality of Godhead, pure devotee. They understood something deeper. At least they were acting on the plan of the Lord, at least that, to instigate an atrocity, instigate Kamsa to get riled up enough that he would kill, attempted murder, kill the sister upon whom he had affection, because he's a demon. But the plan of the Lord intervened and he didn't kill Devaki, because this other arrangement was made by Vasudev that all the children would be given to Kamsa. Now, two other little details. It's kind of complicated. It's mentioned in the purport twice that the gender of the eighth child was not mentioned. Could be a boy, could be a girl, but it wasn't specific. So Prabhupada states in the purport, if it was a child, Kamsa would want to kill the child if the child was a girl, as much as if the child was a boy. And the eighth child was a boy, but then this trick of Vasudev was made so that there was a child switch from the maternity of the prison house to the maternity of Nanda and Yashoda's home on the other side of the river Jamuna, and so the female child was brought. Later, Narada Muni explained that to Kamsa. When Krishna was 12, Narada visited Kamsa for the second time, and Kamsa received him very nicely. Although he's a demon, he was father of at least some of the elements of Vedic culture, and received Narada very nicely. He's a sannyasi visiting the palace of a king. So Narada said, "You pleased me very nicely, so I want to share something with you." The eighth child of Devaki was a boy. And that boy was transferred by Vasudev to the home of Nanda Maharaj. And again, Kamsa got furious. I'm going to kill Vasudev. He cheated me. He deceived me. He tricked me. I'm going to kill him. And Narada said, no. Don't kill him. The other one, the eighth child, go get him. To instigate, the explanation is given. Narada was considering the purpose of Krishna's appearance was to annihilate kings, and he's having such a good time in Vrindavan, he won't even leave Vrindavan. We have to get, you know, him to come to Mathura and kill Kamsa and do all the rest of what he appeared in this world for. It was to instigate Kamsa into atrocity, similar to the voice from the sky to instigate Kamsa to atrocity. It doesn't take much to instigate a demon to atrocity. So that's what he did. And then after, so Kamsa immediately in the presence of Narada started making his plan, how he was going to kill Krishna. He was already trying to kill Krishna, but he made like a fail-safe plan, so-called. Then Narada went to visit Krishna. And he wants the same thing. He wants Krishna to kill the demons. The purpose of, one of the external purposes at least, of his appearance in the world. But how do you tell Krishna, hey Krishna, you have a duty to do. You can't do that. So what did he do? He visited Krishna and he said, I long to see that day when you will go to Mathura and you will leave Vasudev and Devaki from the cruel hands of Kamsa, and you will kill Kamsa, and you'll free your mother and father, Vasudev and Devaki. And after Kamsa is killed, so many other demons will come to retaliate, and you'll kill the demons, and all the purpose of your coming into this world will be fulfilled. I long to see the day. Krishna said, I'm leaving tomorrow. Narada. And then there's one other sentence I'd like to touch on. In the purport, the six sons of Marici had been cursed to take birth from the womb of Devaki, and upon being killed by Kamsa, they would be delivered. So those of you that are familiar with 10th canto, chapter 1, there's an appendix at the end of the chapter, and there's a whole paragraph describing all of this. Who was Marici? Marici was one of the sons of Brahma, the 10 mind-born sons of Brahma. Then after they were born, this daughter was born, and Brahma started chasing after his daughter. And the sons laughed. They made fun. Marici was one of them. And so this curse was made that their sons would then be killed by Vishnu. I think that's correct. So one of them, the sons of Marici, the sons of Marici. So there were six sons of Marici, and they were the ones that were cursed. So they took birth as sons of Kalanemi. Now Kalanemi was a grandson of Hiranyakashipu. Now, a son of Hiranyakashipu was Prahlad, and we know that Virochan was the son of Prahlad. But apparently Prahlad had some brothers, because a grandson named Kalanemi was killed by Vishnu. That's in an earlier canto, where Kalanemi was with some other demons. They had a big battle. Kalanemi was riding a lion. And Vishnu came, and so Kalanemi threw a trident to kill Krishna. Krishna caught the trident, threw the trident back with the same trident he killed Kalanemi. So Kalanemi was killed by Vishnu. Narada, during one of the visits, the former visit, Narada reminded Kamsa that in your previous life you were Kalanemi, and Vishnu killed you. So he's your enemy, right? So you should, you know, get fired up and get back at Vishnu. Be Vishnu's enemy because he's your enemy. So we know that Kalanemi, in his previous life, in his next life was Kamsa. So here's the explanation that's given at the end, this one paragraph in the appendix, is, I'll read it. It's a little complicated. Formerly, an asura named Kalanemi had six sons. Gives their names. These six garbhas gave up the association of Hiranyakashipu, their grandfather, and underwent great austerities to satisfy Lord Brahma. They just did the same thing grandfather did. They went and did some austerities. And when Brahma came and asked them what they wanted, their benediction was they wouldn't be killed this way, that way, the other way, the other way, the other way. So Brahma understood their purpose and fulfilled their desire. But Hiranyakashipu, granddad, came to find out what Kalanemi's sons had done, six garbhas, shad garbhas, and he blasted him and said, "You left me to go to Brahma to get your benediction? I curse you that in your next life, your father, Kalanemi, will take birth as Kamsa and he'll kill every one of you." Now, apparently, Hiranyakashipu was powerful enough. He was born... he was powerful. So his curse bore fruit. The reference that's spoken here is, this is from Harivansha, Vishnu Parva, second chapter. And then Prabhupada writes, according to Vaishnava Toshini, the son of Devaki, known as Kritiman, was that third incarnation. So there's the sons of Marichi, the sons of Kalanemi, the sons of Devaki. Now Prabhupada in the purport takes a shortcut. He says the sons of Marichi were cursed to take birth from the womb of Devaki and be killed by Kamsa. But there's a little interlude in between. Sons of Marichi, sons of Kalanemi, sons of Devaki. Same personalities. So in effect, what Prabhupada explains here is Kamsa was killing his own children because in his previous life he was Kalanemi. Now in this life, he's killing his own children. But he's a demon. Hiranyakashipu wanted to kill Prahlad. And for what reason? Because Prahlad was a Vishnu Bhakta. And Vishnu is his enemy. Demons are pretty outrageous. You know, their standard of culture is out the window. Now, culture enough that Kamsa honored Narada Muni, but if something gets in the way of, you know, the intention or the aspiration of a demon, he's ready to kill Devaki. He's ready to, you know, anything in order to achieve your ends. So culture is utilitarian. It's for the purpose, culture for a demon is for the purpose of getting kriti so they can be a stronger duskriti. They can misuse the kriti. And if there's an interference in the goal, then it's duskriti all the way. Of course, they lose their pious credit. What to speak of offending what the demigods wanted, back to the message of the purport. This unembodied voice, Asharira Vak, the demigods wanted to bring the downfall of Kamsa. Because surely Krishna will protect his devotee. Devaki is Krishna's mother. And they knew. And so, although it hadn't happened yet, she was just still, you know, newly married. But she would become the father of, she would become the mother of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So let's get rid of Kamsa. Let him increase his atrocities. That's not the normal way that devotees, even mixed devotees, act. So somehow they were acting under the direction or according to the will of the Supreme. So it's a little complicated with all these personalities, but Jitendra is shaking his head. Too complicated. Well, we hear, from my, I started this off by saying, I get so confused. So in order to get unconfused, I have to spend a substantial amount of time going over it and going over it and going over it and kind of wiring it down. So the Andaka, Vrishni, and Bhoja dynasties, you know, who is who in that line? So over here is this line and over here is that line. And Ugrasena, brother of Devaka gave his daughters in marriage to someone over here in this Bhoja line, Vasudeva. And so like that. Ugrasena had a son, Kamsa. They're not sisters, brother, sister, but cousin, brother, sister. He performed the cultural act and he had affection for Devaki. But it's all part of a big orchestration because in one sense, in Queen Kunti's prayers, in Queen Kunti's prayers, she suggests reasons why some people say the unborn, that's Krishna, takes birth. It's a mystery how the unborn takes birth. But one of the reasons is to honor the king, King Yadu. So he appears in the Yadu Vansha, and that's that, you know, a previous ancestor, the Bhoja and Andaka and Vrishni dynasties, King Yadu. So we hear about King Yadu in the Bhagavatam. So what would we know about Yadu if it weren't for Krishna appearing? So he's honoring these families because going back to Canto 9, there's the Sun Dynasty and the Moon Dynasty. That's what Canto 9 is. The dynasty coming from the sun, the dynasty coming from the moon. And Krishna appeared in the moon dynasty. Rama appeared in the sun dynasty. That's like really simple language. And then there's all these personalities. And they're important because the personality of Godhead appeared in that dynasty. So they're honored because of Krishna's appearance or Rama's appearance. And they're great personalities for the most part. And then, you know, there's this, this other thing of the six sons of Marici who were cursed then to become born demons. So they were born as sons of Kalanemi. And then Hiranyakashipu, the grandfather, cursed them, "You'll be killed by your father in your next life." So it's just that detailing, you know, what's in Bhagavad Gita. There's the divine and demoniac nature. And the Puranas give us some details about the demoniac nature. And demoniac nature doesn't care. The selfishness is overwhelming. And that's the consequence. What's the root of the demoniac nature? Really simple. Anyone that's heard Prabhupada knows this principle. Do you accept the personality of Godhead? No. Demon. You know, but he's a big scholar, or he's a big, you know, something or other. Demon. That's Prabhupada. So right away, we don't need a big examination. Do you accept the personality of Godhead and want to serve and worship him? No. Demon. So that's strong. But then, you know, what does it look like? And here's something of what it looks like. And in principle, demoniac persons can do anything, because there's no authority above them. And those that accept the authority of the personality of Godhead and worship him, they're controlled by him. They're controlled by, initially they're controlled by vidhis or rules that come from him, and higher as they're controlled by love. So it's prana. There's history. That's what prana means. It's the history of the divine and the demoniac. The chapter of Bhagavad Gita just expanded in detail the nature of both. So hearing the names of the divine, just hearing the names of the divine, it increases our spiritual qualification. It's purifying. And to be warned about the demoniac, that's also, we don't like chant Hiranyakashipu's name or Kamsa's name, but we're clear what their mentality is, and they can do anything. So when Krishna comes to kill them, it's good. Because some people that are moralists, they say it's bad. Not just some people. Gandhi said, he wrote in his commentary on Bhagavad Gita, because I read it. It was referred to me, so I read it. It's actually that it translated into English. If I don't accept that there was a Kurukshetra battle and that Krishna caused Arjuna to fight, if that's a fact, I give up my Hinduism. He who is known as being the exponent of Bhagavad Gita. I don't accept there was Krishna, a person. And there was a battlefield. And there was Krishna's instruction to Arjuna to fight. It's right there. The language is very clear. Yudhya. Always think of me and engage in your prescribed duty. This prescribed duty, the word is yudhya. It's fighting. No. No such thing. I give up my Hinduism. So, some people, moralists, have a problem with Krishna's killing. Krishna's killing Kamsa. Krishna's killing, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So they don't like that. So they like Bal Gopal, Krishna's little child. And even as a little child, he killed right away. He killed Putana. Leave that to the side. Krishna stole butter. Thief. Got a special name, Makhanchur. He's a thief. We're honoring him. He ran from the battlefield, Ranchor. We're honoring him because it's pastime. So we like Krishna's pastimes when it comes to things like Krishna's killing Kamsa. There's the whole picture behind it. He appeared on the request of the demigods and Mother Earth, please relieve the burden of the earth, of the demoniac kings. They're too much even for the demigods. They couldn't handle it. So Krishna came, and he handled it. And then there's personalities involved in all that. So that's the Puranic element. It's not, if you don't know, if you can't sort out all those names, you can't go back to Godhead. It's not like that. But the details are, there's importance. Just like our past, we're familiar more with Krishna's pastimes. And in Krishna's pastimes, there's details of the, you know, this cowherd boy and that cowherd boy and this gopi and that gopi and this elder and that elder and the elder brahmanas and the wives of the brahmanas. And it, in one sense, it's story, but by hearing it again and again and again and again, we get a sense of the personalities and the kind of love that these personalities have for Krishna. It stimulates love of a particular kind. So it's important. The detail is important as one progresses further. Just a little sharing. I asked, just yesterday, I wrote to somebody that's far away and asked him, have you been, had a chance to listen to the Ayodhya Yatra lectures and videos? He said, I started, but all the names are too complicated. Similarly, you know, shaking his head. True. We're familiar, in ISKCON, we're very familiar, far more familiar with Krishna's pastimes. But Ramchandra's pastimes, all the names were like, but by hearing it again and hearing it again and hearing it again and hearing it again, those names start to emerge as personalities with a particular relationship with Krishna. And they have a love for Ram in a particular way, or a role to play in that pastime in a particular way. And there's lessons about how to lead one's life in an ideal way if one reads it deeply. There's different versions of Ramayana. I didn't know that until I started preparing for that yatra. And one of the versions of Ramayana, after everybody goes to Chitrakoot and tries to dissuade Ram to come back and rule in Ayodhya, and he takes his position and doesn't budge, one of the versions, Kaikeyi, after everyone has departed, goes to Ram. His mother falls at his feet and pleads with Ram to forgive her. I don't know what happened. I, as everyone told me, I have more affection for you than I have for Bharat. And you have more affection for me than Bharat has for me. And I don't know how I did this, but somehow I did this, and please forgive me. And Ram's answer was, it was providential. You acted according to the will of providence. There's a higher purpose in all of this. Certainly, you know, there's no need to give forgiveness. You're acting according to the providential order. And she was relieved. Because he's Ram. He doesn't hold grudges. You know, he stands by truth. That's Ram. There's so many nice examples. So all the names in Ramayana and all the names just discussed today, It's complicated. You know, it's, I normally just don't let my mind go there. Just get the essence and leave all that other stuff alone. Too complicated. But at some point, it's meaningful. You know, culturally, how does somebody over here marry somebody over there? And, you know, what are some of the rules that are part of Vedic culture? That if followed, it helps. It's not the essence, but it helps to create the culture of Krishna consciousness. It's there in the Bhagavad Purana for a reason, just like the whole section of fifth canto of Vedic astronomy. It's too complicated. Or third canto Shankya philosophy. Too complicated. Mind-bending. But it's in the Bhagavatam. And so it wouldn't be in the Bhagavatam if it wasn't important. Vyasadeva's not, you know, wasting his time or our time. It helps bring focus upon the personality of Godhead. That's why it's there. Otherwise it wouldn't be there. Everything in the Bhagavatam is for that purpose. It helps us shore our faith in Shuddha Bhakti, because that's where the Bhagavatam takes us, to Shuddha Bhakti. It's not in essence, all the names. It helps us. That's right there. Any comments or questions? Yes. Go ahead, start.
Just a matter of curiosity, so to speak. Is who was that voice that...
The demigods.
But no specific...
Doesn't say which one. It's right in the purport, and I don't know more than that. The demigods.
Okay.
The demigods. Doesn't say who.
Oh, that's what I wanted to know. Like, was Indra or...
Maybe somewhere it's written, but I don't know. I just, demigods. Yes?
I was thinking about Gandhi when he got shot like 70 years ago, he said, he Ram. So he had some affinity for Ram, but
yeah.
I guess not for Krishna, so... That's to his credit, I guess.
Well, to his credit, and you know, what was his conception of Ram when he chanted Ram's name?
Yeah.
He is an impersonalist, you know, putting it bluntly. Mm-hmm. When Bhakti Vikash Maharaj has a group of researcher disciples that do things, and so he's researched what Gandhi said in different speeches, what Gandhi wrote in different essays and articles. He's explicitly an impersonalist. No, yes, he read Bhagavad Gita and chanted Ram's name. He's an impersonalist.
We also say that this Krishna consciousness is meant to be a revolution in the impious lives of people that are victims of the age. So
yes.
I remember devotees that were demons before they became the Krishna consciousness.
Well,
so they
take
can
that simple definition, and you know, most of us are in that category. But revolution, Viplava.
What does Prabhupada say? They were good people influenced by a bad society.
Yeah.
And then there's something else to that. But somehow or other, you know, they had a change of heart, you know.
Yeah. Prabhupada, it's the association of a pure devotee.
And Prabhupada said we must become like snake charmers, you know, to appease them. Devaki's husband, Vyasadeva, he was charming Kamsa, but he could
you
see
have to
the
be
bigger
really
picture.
Good to be a snake charmer, though.
Pardon me?
You have to be really skilled to be a snake charmer, otherwise you're dead.
Yeah.
Anything?
Thank you very much, Maharaj. Very nice explanation. I had one question. As you mentioned, the demons are naturally off the line, so they normally curse their grants, and just like you've mentioned, that Hiranyakashipu curse their grandsons, right? So the question comes that why Lord Brahma cursed Marichi son, that's also probably...
Why Brahma cursed?
I mean...
The sons of Marichi?
Yes. Influenced by the modes of nature or just their karmas or...
I don't know of any statement by our acharyas that gives the answer to that question. So one might argue in either side. He knew something, and because he knew something, he did what he did. There was something was to happen, and so he did what he did. One could argue like that. Or one could argue that just like his chasing his daughter, that wasn't transcendental. And he was checked. His Krishna from within his heart checked him, and he stopped. But so is this other one, you know, springing from that same, he's, you know, in charge of the mode of passion and sometimes influenced by it. Mm-hmm. So one could argue that side. From Kamesha Krodesha, and he cursed. Instead of being tolerant and forgiving. Or, you know, instructing them, saying, my dear sons of Marichi, this is offensive, and, you know, check yourselves. So that's more of a sattvic response than the anger response. Anger has its use in service to the Supreme Lord. That's certainly something that Narottam Das Thakur teaches. And was that what Brahma was doing, anger in service to the Supreme Lord, or was it arising from the modes of nature? We would take an acharya to give the answer to that one. And I don't know if there's any commentary saying, maybe there is.
Maharshi, you mentioned briefly Hiranyakashipu. I always wondered in that pastime why they chose three lives as demons as opposed to, I think, seven lives as devotees. Because on the one hand, okay, they go back to Vaikuntha sooner. But for a pure devotee, even salokya or association, they're not attached to those liberations. Like, it seems so heart-wrenching that from a pure devotee to become, because it said that in that life they were actually demons. They weren't, like we know ontologically, they were giant vijay, but that was in a previous life. In that next life, they were actually of demoniac nature. So, anyway, it's just something that out of curiosity, you know, to maintain a devotional mentality would seem more favorable, but I don't know.
Why did they choose three lives as demons as opposed to a longer number of lives as devotees? That's your question? Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur supplies an answer. Jayan Vijay, being intimate doorkeepers, gatekeepers of Narayana, they knew his nature. And part of his nature is the secondary rasa of chivalry. And they were praying to him, we know that you have this desire, but who's capable of giving you good combat? If you like, we can do that. It was a prayer. And so he accepted their prayer and gave them the opportunity, and they did that service. Because it was for a service. No, they can do service in other ways too, but that specific service, who's going to be the qualified person to be his opponent? Now, as I was reading this, I was thinking, I often puzzled about the Shishupal and Dantavakra, not Kamsa. And Kamsa wasn't Jayavijay. Kamsa was Kalanemi. So, you know, Kamsa is like the main guy here, more than Dantavakra and Shishupal in Krishna's pastimes. It's Kamsa that did these atrocities. Not, you know, we don't know so much about the atrocities of those others, but we know a lot about the, because of his, so he had a nice, opportunity to become Krishna conscious. And he was really Krishna conscious out of fear. But it wasn't Jayavijay. Previously Kalanemi. And doesn't say who Kalanemi was before he was Kalanemi. And just, you know, different persons from different positions can just come in contact with Krishna. However, not, okay, it's fantastic, just be a big demon and get liberation. That's the way to go. Not an advocacy. In the beginning, I'm not directly answering your question now, but in the beginning of Canto 7, after Shishupal's deliverance, there's a verse that our acharyas refer to regularly, that Narada says, fixing the mind on the personality of Godhead is most intensely observed when one has fear or hatred, dvesha or bhaya. But it's not favorable. Now, that doesn't mean that Mother Jasoda and Nanda Maharaj weren't thinking of Krishna as much as Shishupal and Kamsa. But it's a very powerful impetus, but the power of love is stronger. Power of love is stronger than anything. So therefore we aspire for loving devotional service. So now back to your question. They wanted to serve Narayan. In a particular way, if he so desired. Okay, we'll end there. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.